You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel.
Coming up this week in episode 315. Why would anyone under 90 years old go to an antiques fair? We ask, is the game up for Sky Sports? And lawyers, parties and alcohol, a dangerous mix. That's all coming up after REM and Shiny Happy People. I was in the States when that was released, and I remember it bringing great cheer to the evening when they performed it on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable, 26 years ago.
I can't believe how the time goes, frankly. It's ridiculous.
REM with Kate Pearson from the B-52s. Number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 6 on the UK Top 40, Shiny Happy People.
And if you want a good alternative version of that, they went on Sesame Street and performed it as Furry Happy Monsters.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd love to see that. I'm going to look that up.
It's available online very readily. It's really sweet.
Welcome to another podcast from the Parish Council. This is episode 315. I'm Terence Stackham, and she's a high-quality person, and I applaud her transparency. It's Juliet Harris.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hello, good evening and welcome to everybody, or good morning or good afternoon. Speaking of the high-quality person, it reminds me of I had a hated boss when I worked in Tamworth George a few years ago, which I think I've talked about on the podcast before. And but actually, he did have some very good phrases, and he once described someone as being a low-calibre individual, which was obviously extremely insulting. Not a high-calibre individual, he said. So if you say it in a slightly kind of posh public school way, it sounds extremely cutting and extremely good. So yes, I consider myself to be a high caliber individual.
Absolutely. It just did occur to me though that if I make topical references to Donald Trump Jr., and bearing in mind that many, many people listen to these podcasts weeks, if not months, if not years after they were recorded, people in the future will be thinking, what the hell was he talking about?
Indeed, or Donald T. Rump Jr., as I think we used to be him properly.
Back in the 1990s, I was living with a woman from Yorkshire. Now, that's not a crime in itself.
No, although I am glad that you've managed to get through that difficult time.
And she liked nothing more than hauling us around antiques fairs all over the south of England. And I soon became an unwilling expert on Clarice Cliff cups and saucers and Treen cabinetry and the like. Now, her favourite thing, which was a bit peculiar, her favourite thing was to buy brass kettles that looked like they'd been used as a football, cost her about a quid back in the 1990s. There were always dozens of these at antiques fairs in the 1990s.
And then
she would spend hours bashing them back into shape and polishing them up and then flogging them for about 30 quid a pop at the same sort of antique fair. So, you know, got a little business there.
Absolutely, that's enterprising.
However, these eternal Sunday mornings at Lingfield and Sandown, they always seem to be held at racecourses.
Yeah, 9 a.m. eternal is the KLF, you, I suspect.
That led me to a sort of contrarian dislike of the antiques business. Now, you, however, Juliet Lucy, you are a willing participant in this slice of life.
I am aware that boot fairs are a peculiarly English activity, that we get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to drive to fields, often in rainy conditions, to look at other people's rubbish. I am aware and pay money for
good
it.
Summary.
I'm aware that it's an odd thing to do, yeah. But having said that, I do love vintage stuff and secondhand things. And there's an excellent place in Hastings Old Town. There's very excellent places in Hastings Old Town, but there's a place called Robert's Rummage, which has some, which is very much what it says on the tin, and has a great deal of fame locally. I once bought a wooden carved horse which looked like it might have been a ship's head once upon a time, who I named Charles because he looked like King Charles, because he had long black, and I suspect because I looked like King Charles, for the princely sum of £3.80, and Charles now lives in my hall. So I am a big fan of buying rubbish. Recently I went on a coach trip with my parents, which basically we went to Parham House, which is a lovely property kind of in West Sussex. It's a charitable trust rather than a National Trust property, but it could well be a National Trust property. So they've got the third longest long gallery in Britain, apparently. So lots of old Elizabethan type stuff there, and large gardens which are very pleasant, including I had an excellent opportunity to go and experience their gladioli trial. They're trying different kind of species of gladioli, apparently, and they put them all in
Aren't
numbers.
You the lucky one?
Absolutely. I like to live fast and die young. And they have various... I was very struck by the fact that it was kind of an album sleeve, a track listing, really, and that the Gladiolo Trial 2017 included a Black Surprise and Break O' Dawn and Evergreen. It sounds like a... And White Prosperity. It sounds like either a sort of a rather far-right kind of a chant or Plum Tart as well. I thought it was excellent, kind of an album track listing. But one thing that we did do... There was a large plant fair, so it mostly consisted of my mum going round buying various plants whilst we sat my dad near two young men playing jazz music, and we then had to smuggle them into the luggage rack of the coach on the way home without my dad noticing. So that was quite a nice recreation activity. But they also had some vintage stores. So I found myself falling into a childlike state where I don't usually buy stuff. Well, I buy stuff, but I'm not someone that sets their heart on things. My mum and her sister particularly set their heart on things, particularly when I go to places like Dunelm Mill. My mum's sister will always find stuff she can't live without. I'm not usually in that mindset, but I saw this glorious stall that had a, my mum kept insisting it was called a feed sack stall, and that basically the top of the stall was a old feed sack with a large cow's head on it. And I just fell in love with it. I just instantly wanted this stall and decided that I was going to buy this stall, and that I did not care if I had to sit with it on my lap on the way home on the coach, and I did not care if they had to find someone on the coach for it. As far as I was concerned, it was my human right to buy this stall, and that's what I was going to do. It's not in the best state ever, as my mum put it. Well, let us know when it collapses and we'll come and fix it for you. But I went to buy, and this is why I love vintage shopping, because you meet the most bizarre characters, the most interesting characters. So the store appeared to be run by a slightly older, not elderly, I would say, but older married couple. So the man, initially I told him I was going to be on a coach, and the man said, oh, you know, it's this stall's great, but I can't get it to fully collapse. And basically, it's difficult for me to describe this, but but we ended up with the top bit of the stall sticking out at a right angle. So there was a bit of a hoo-ha as to whether or not we were going to be able to fit it on the coach, blah, blah, blah. And I decided against it. And then I said to my mum, no, I'm going to go back and I'm going to buy this stall. Upon which point I said to the woman, I am going to buy that stall. And she said, you know, I think my husband's talking rubbish. This will collapse. Come on, let's make it collapse. At which point the woman picked up the stall, bent the stem the other way round, and closed it perfectly first time, and said, honestly, I don't know why he's so stupid. At which point I gave her the money for the stall, and the man then admitted his own stupidity. He said, mind you, I have a brother at university, but you know, his brain's in a jar there. And I'm always very entertained by meeting people in vintage shops and you know, secondhand shops. Yes, it is a bit of a rip-off, as you say, no offense to your former paramour, but you know, it is full of buying catalysts for a pound and then bashing them up and repurposing them for 30. There is an element of what we call DFL down from London in my local tier about it all, I think. I know that you don't like this sort of thing.
No, and I really don't.
We can tie this into previous discussions we've had here.
Okay.
You are very much a man, I feel, that likes order in things and likes tidiness and cleanliness in things.
So you
dislike cricket picnics with pork pies and green curry. By the way, listeners, whilst we were actually at this thing, I did send Terrence a picture of my mum with a pork pie wrapped in cling film.
I'm still shuddering.
I was going to say, it was meant to involve you in our day out, but it didn't quite happen. It seems that wasn't the end goal. Anyway, so you don't like pork pies wrapped in cling film. You dislike vinyl intently, and you are almost offended that I continue to persevere with it. You like things that are minimal, and you like things that are clean, and you like things that are in order.
Perfect summary, yes, that's it.
So going to, you are the polar opposite of me. So going to a vintage fair or a boot fair, particularly, I can imagine, would be offensive to you. The thought of going around trestle tables with other people's old things. And I also think you don't like things that have been used before, because you don't like the idea of what might have happened, possibly.
That's very true. I carry around that sort of antiseptic gel, and I'm putting that over my hands all the time.
Well, you know, I very much employ the 10-second rule when food falls on the floor. So I think that there might be a deep psychological thing here as well about the fact that you like things to be new and fresh. You don't like the idea of things that have been used before. So I feel that, you know, I'm embracing the future, and you're not. But weirdly, isn't this interesting? My conclusion is in that by going to buy stuff that has you know, been used before, in a way, I am weirdly being quite open-minded, embracing of the future, even though I'm buying stuff from a previous time.
Well, you see, I look at it another way. My experiences of trudging round antique fairs, and indeed, it should be said, my appearances in the 1980s in the television series Lovejoy, based around the antiques trade.
I did not know this, and I'm absolutely delighted by this.
Yes. All of that. It's led me to a philosophy of, why buy something covered in dust and grime and a century's worth of muck when you can go to IKEA and buy something new? And plus, of course,
thing, Terence, it's just the same as everyone else has. Everyone can go to IKEA and buy something new, and something that's just a boring old white stool and not doesn't have a feed sack top.
Well, but also, of course, IKEA has great cake, whereas all you can expect at antiques fairs is a styrofoam cup of dishwasher coffee.
Depends. You do get those E. coli style burgers as well, but I suppose that's not improving the situation.
I mean, that strawberry tartar IKEA is worth the visit alone, it has to be said.
Well, yes, and the meatballs are excellent. I'm not disagreeing with you on this. Having said that, I'm sure I've been to boot fairs. There's a famous boot fair called the Robin Hood Boot Fair, local to me, which is at Icklesham on the way to Rye. I don't know why it's called Robin Hood. I think the field is called Robin Hood for some reason. I don't really know why. Anyway, that is famous and people, and there's another one there as well. And I've been there to buy records before with people. And I have had fairy cakes at the Robin Hood Boot Fair before. So maybe you just need to go to better boot fairs.
You see, people often laugh about people like Jean-Paul Getty and indeed Howard Hughes about how they used to put tissues down on the floor to walk on in case they got infected. And they only used to open door handles whilst carrying a tissue and then put a tissue in a bin. I've got a lot of empathy with these people. I think that's the way to live. So I think you're on the case.
Think, pop home, have a bath, and then you can just start the next day fresh and unhindered.
Well, there is that. I can see it. Is the game up for Sky Sports and their upstart challengers at BT Sport? That's next after Portishead.
Yeah.
do like this a great deal, not least because it very much the 90s, I think, started. People say that the 80s was the age of MTV and music videos, but I think they really kind of got into the swing of things in the 90s, actually. And the All Mine video by Portishead is slightly terrifying, like the song in places, and features a string quartet that never actually play, which I think is quite a and also a metaphor for many things going on around us at the moment, I feel. But anyway, it was from their self-titled second album, and it was one of the singles off that, and it's called All Mine. And I'm just looking to see what its chart performance was. It did manage to make it to number 8 on the UK singles chart, and also 42 on the Switzerland chart, the excellently titled Schweizer Hit Parade.
They were seem to be dipping in and out of hiatus, Portishead.
Yes, they did. They did take a very, very long time to release their third album. 11 years, I believe, from 97, that one, Portishead, to third in 2008. And they did do an excellently miserable version of SOS by ABBA for recently. They released for, it was a video release only online. It was something to do with their refugees, I think, and raising money for that. Oh. So they do occasionally pop up. Beth Gibbons has had some sort of solo stuff, and she also was sang with a guy called Rustin Man, and did a nice folky album. Jeff Barrow, who was the sort of youngest member of Portishead, the turntable chap, is worth a follow on Twitter as Jet Fury, and he really is furious most of the time about many things. But he also was in a band called Beak, who I saw supporting Savages a few years ago, and kind of turned up vaguely interested halfway through, and afterwards listened to their stuff, and wished that I had actually concentrated properly, because it is kind of very interesting, slightly Can-esque kind of loops and that sort of thing. And he also runs a record label called Invader Records. Listeners to Windy Wonderland know that I'm occasionally insulted by people deliberately misspelling things. So it is spelt Invada.
Oh, Lord.
No, apart from that, though, much to recommend.
Now, admittedly, it also includes my broadband, but for the privilege of having Virgin Media cable TV coming into my house, largely to enable me to watch Premiership football, I pay Richard Branson an eye-watering £132 each month.
That's really dear.
That's a lot, isn't it? Each time... the rights to transmit football from the Premier League come around. The television companies, they seem to have to fork out yet more billions of pounds. And, of course, the top players then siphon off £20 million a year each. And my bank balance is reduced accordingly. But for this coming season, Sky Sports is going through a shake-up. It seems a number of customers with more sense than me are saying thanks, but no thanks. And so prices for packages are being reduced. Football will be getting its own dedicated channels, and the other sports channels will now be cheaper to subscribe to. And it's said it'll be easier to buy into Premiership games on a one-off pay-per-view basis. Now, you've always steered clear of Sky Sports, Jules. Are you tempted by these new packages?
No, I don't. Well, I won't buy Sky stuff because I am continuing to keep up my objection to Rupert Murdoch, and I don't think. Although having said that, I did crack on my 17-year McDonald's boycott the other week. So who knows?
Who knows what could happen?
But yeah, indeed, we live in uncertain times. But I can't get past the fact that I don't want to give Rupert Murdoch my money. Although having said that, I do have an online subscription to The Times, which I've just about managed to justify on the basis that it is the legal paper and I do have to read it. And also there is some good writing in The Times. Not all of it has been trashed by Murdoch, but
how can you justify giving Rupert Murdoch your £1.60 equivalent a day for buying The Times, albeit with your sort of caveat of needing it for law reasons, but then say, oh, but I'm not giving him...
I do have another reason, actually, for being objecting to Sky, as well as being objecting to him generally, which is we've talked previously about Sky's kind of... how the TV companies have ended up ruling football, and you have kickoffs at stupid times, like 5 o'clock on a Sunday, or ridiculous times, simply because that's when the football companies want to put it on. And I think that Sky were the original offenders at that. They are still by far and away the worst offenders at that. And I don't want to give them my money as a result of that
with
as well.
You
so
that.
I do have more than one reason, and I do have a huge objection to them on that basis. BT Sports don't seem to do a similar thing. I think, as you know, I am a subscriber to BT Sports because I have my phone and broadband with BT.
Yeah.
And I have a BT Vision box, and as a result of which I did decide to go to BT Sports. The interesting thing about this Sky thing, and I can actually kind of see it, is that they're saying, and one thing that has put me off with Sky is that A, it has been really quite expensive, and B, I want to watch things like British Eurosport, which has cycling on it, and snooker as well, and things that are slightly more unusual. And the way that the packages have worked in the past, you have to pay for other things as well. And so I think the idea of saying, I can buy the cricket channel and individual football matches, say QPR had a cup run, which, you know, is implausible, frankly. But if they, me and my friend used to have an excellent game, things that are longer than QPR cup runs. Morky McKay's diversity training was one of the examples, if I remember correctly. But anyway, so my view is that it's a good idea, I think. And even if I wasn't objecting to Sky for other reasons, I would give it some thought, I think, that the idea that you could buy individual channels. So, you know, I would like to watch cricket, for example, and I would be a bit more tempted by the cricket channel. Part of the reason why Sky have ended up having to do this, which I don't think anybody wants to say, really. It says in this Guardian article about it, Sky has put the viewing dip over the past year down to airing more games per season, many of which feature less popular clubs. The relegation of clubs with relatively large fan bases, such as Newcastle and Aston Villa, and the BBC's live Rio Olympics coverage, which was last year, of course. I think that part of the reason why Sky, they say, well, they're airing more games. Yes, but the reason that they're airing less good games is that the competition is now greater in the market. And this is another reason why I've objected to Sky for so many years, because of the monopoly aspect of it, which is one of the things I find offensive about Murdoch. And in a way, that makes it okay for me to buy the Times, because there are other newspapers. Whereas at one point, it seemed that you could only ever watch sport on Sky, that you were being squeezed. And then the entry of people like BT Sport into the market, that's really changed things in a way that was it Setanta?
Yes, Setanta.
It changed everything, didn't it? And didn't. And ESPN and that sort of thing. But the idea that BT Sport now are buying more games and are showing the bigger matches. I mean, you can watch the big teams on BT Sport. It's not, because at first, when it first came in, I thought, this is going to be Sky are going to have the big matches. And then, you know, the big draw on BT Sport is going to be Bolton versus Stoke, isn't it, on a Tuesday evening? No offence to Bolton or Stoke. and actually, BT Sport have got some quite good games, and they've shown, you know, the big Saturday lunchtime games, despite the fact I object to football being played then, but you know, they've shown the bigger games. And in a way, I'm glad that Sky have, you know, been knocked off their perch a bit, and they've had to reduce their prices, because it reduces their monopoly on things, and I think that's only a good thing.
One breathtaking stat from researching how much the TV companies pay for Premiership football. This is why the
leagues are kind of meant to be a bit more balanced now, because clubs can make, and why being relegated from the Premiership is an enormous disaster of every proportions now, because you end up losing out on the telly money, don't you?
You do, which works out. This is what I found, is the TV companies paying for Premiership football. It works out £11 million per game they pay. That's regardless of whether it's Chelsea v Man U or your Watford against your Stoke. You know, the amount they pay per season for a block number of games means that it's £11 million a game. And I certainly agree with you. One thing that I find absolutely crazy is that scheduling business, where, as you rightly say, you might get a game kicking off at 5 p.m. or 7:30 or 8 o'clock or something, which means that people from Newcastle are stranded in Southampton at 11 p.m. at night on a Monday night, for example. And, you know, there's no consideration given at all to the supporters who go to the game. It's all about milking the subscribers. But one thing I noticed on the increase last season was the ease of access to, shall we say, unofficial feeds of Premiership games. And if you follow one or two specific accounts on Twitter, there are these one-click links to just about every sporting event around the world, including Premiership football, pay-per-view, boxing, all this sort of thing. Of course, we can't obviously endorse that, but that seems to be one of the key reasons for the drop in these hugely expensive subscriptions. People are clearly thinking, why should I pay £130 a month when I can watch it for nothing through this one-click internet site? And as we know, as soon as people get used to accessing something for nothing on the internet, as with music, newspapers, they simply won't go back to paying for it. And that's my theory of why the numbers are dropping on the, you know, the paid for subscription.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if like Sky, you've charged ridiculously for so long, you know, you end up wanting to investigate other options, don't you? And I end up thinking, oh, well, I might as well go to a pub and watch a dodgy stream from the Middle East or whatever. And it's not that bad, really. And you get to the point where you just think, you know, why, if you've found other options, it's a bit late for Sky to now go, oh, come back, we promise we won't completely gouge you for the privilege of watching Swindon in the FA Cup. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, it's a bit late now, really. We've found other alternatives. And also people like BT Sport have come and taken some matches off you, and I'm glad. So I would like to see more TV on terrestrial TV sport again. I really do. But I'm increasingly coming to the conclusion that ship might have sailed. I don't know. I know there is on terrestrial TV that there's still a lot of athletics on BBC, which I enjoy, and that the BBC still broadcasts all the, like they say, the Rio Olympics and all the kind of events of national importance. The internationals are still on TV by and large, the football internationals. There is some cricket on Channel 5, which even Channel 5 can't ruin, and you know, it's not there is some, but I'd like to see more sport on TV again. We won't go into Formula 1 because every time we talk about Formula 1 there are complaints, but yeah, so I'm not tempted by Sky, partly because I have the option of BT Sport, which shows a lot of tennis as well, partly because I still object to Murdoch, and partly because I particularly object to Sky's past behaviour, in their monopoly style behaviour, both in their charging and their ruling of sport and their changing of times to suit them. And I think, well, I'm glad people have left you, and it serves you right.
Summer parties, maybe a night out with work colleagues. What could possibly go wrong? That's coming up right after Jackson Browne. We tend to think of those first few albums of his from the early 70s as the classics, but this album from 1983 is absolutely one of his best. 8 tracks, 4 were released as singles, 3 were major hits on the Billboard Hot 100. That was one of them, Jackson Browne, and the title track from the album, Lawyers in Love. Now, I'm rather po-faced and prim about alcohol.
I thank you for adding about alcohol to the end of that.
That was in brackets, you know.
In this instance,
yeah. Yes. I'm not a drinker myself, and feel free to accuse me of being Mr. Misery here. But
No, you're entitled to do as you please, Terence. And I do drink, and occasionally enthusiastically, I dislike the idea that as a culture, my dad's big into this, as a culture, we automatically associate having a good time and alcohol as being completely inseparable, and how we judge others for not having the same attitude. So you do as much or as little drinking as you wish, Terence, so you will not get no judging from me. You'll actually get some admiration.
Oh, well, I never see anything other than a very mild intake of booze actually improve the behaviour of people, and I'm fairly sure that, you know, it does put me in a rather Puritan minority. But on the other hand,
it's that large hat with the buckle on it that you wear, I think.
I'm beginning to feel that many, if not most, of our town centres these days are no-go zones on Friday and Saturday evenings.
It's
full of you young people swerving about. Throwing...
Well, I told you my unfortunate experience the other week when I'd been out DJing and couldn't get a cab from my usual place, and so I had to join the rank at 1:30 on a Saturday evening in the middle of Hastings, and a young man left the queue to briefly go, "We against an estate agent," which obviously I actually had some sympathy with, but they're not pleasant places, provincial town centres at the moment.
No, people increasingly, I think, essentially acting out a kind of pictorial of William Hogarth's Rake's Progress in our towns. So it was little surprise when you found this story in the Law Gazette, which highlighted really the career busting issues that can evolve from a mixture of social parties related to one's workplace and that demon drink, Jules.
Yes, this is true. And the reason that I was thinking about this anyway, because we're in the sort of summer party season, and in my sector, the legal sector, people have summer parties as well as Christmas days. But I obviously read the Law Gazette quite a lot of the time, because that's what I'm meant to do. And I was going to come across this thing because I thought we could have a chat about it. This is and I'm enjoying the use of quote marks here. I think I do love a good quote mark to emphasise things. So, partner acted in, open quotes, physical manner, close quotes, oh gosh, to female colleagues at Christmas social. And basically, this chap was a partner in a firm called Winkworth Sherwood, who are a well thought of firm in London. They are solicitors and also parliamentary agents. They're one of the very few that are both, and I applied unsuccessfully for a job with them years and years ago. And so they're kind of old. They're not old school, but they're kind of well thought of, I think. But they are, I suppose, old school in a way. And so nowadays, actually, people in the profession are rather more clean cut than they used to be. And actually, there's been some interesting research that although young people apparently are drinking still, apparently there are far more teetotal young people than there used to be. And I read a very interesting article about a long piece arguing that tuition fees have ruined university life in a lot of ways. And one of the ways in which is that they reckon that drinking was very, 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 very low because young people felt so pressurised to constantly get results because they were paying a lot of money for their degree. So that's probably a discussion for another day. But so the legal profession is far more clean cut than it used to be. There aren't sort of 5-hour lunches anymore. We don't live in that kind of world anymore. But the Christmas party is a different story. This poor chap, well, not poor chap, this he became intoxicated, it says in this story, at the firm's Christmas party on the 8th of December 2016. According to an SRA, so the Solicitors Regulation Authority, so our disciplinary body, published this week, he acted in an inappropriate physical manner towards several members of the firm's staff who were female, unfortunately. I think the worst bit about this story, although no staff members raised formal grievances or sought to take the matter further, the chap made an apology which was published on the firm's intranet. And that made my blood run cold. The idea that, you know, because we have an intranet where when you open up to go onto the internet. It's you know, that's sort of our home page. Yeah. And the thought of me having to run that, I'm terribly sorry I had too many light ales and shouted at you about Donald Trump. You know, the thought of that is just terrible, really.
Mortifying, isn't it?
It is. And it's interesting that, and it just goes to show, like you say, about kind of have demon drink. And my mum was talking about this morning. So he was admitted breaching principle 6 of our principles, which means failing to behave in a way that maintains the trust the public place in him and the provision of legal services. And it's interesting to think, does him getting drunk and being a bit grabby at a Christmas party, I'm sorry to diminish this, but you know, is that really significant? Would we know about their Christmas party? I mean, you know, I felt a little bit to me like I don't think it's acceptable behaviour at a Christmas party, and I think it was rightly dealt with internally. But I think that he's ended up resigning as a partner from the firm. And he apologized, and he's pointed out that he resigned promptly. He cooperated fully with the USR and had a full regulatory history. He was rebuked and he agreed to the publication of the agreement and to pay £600 cost. That feels to me a bit, he shouldn't have got drunk at the Christmas party. He shouldn't have, you know, been after women. That's not always, and you know, there are men that behave inappropriately at Christmas parties, and that's not right. But it does, I think, the idea that the public trust in the profession would be dented because people had too much to drink and were a bit inappropriate at a Christmas party, I think that's the same in offices across the land in all professions, really. Having said this, hang on, what do you think about that?
Well, unusually in life, I think it's possible to have certain degrees of sympathy with all participants in this scenario, mainly with the women, of course, who were at the wrong end of the blokes, as you quote, inappropriate physical manner. But, and then that's not acceptable in any circumstances. But I have an ounce of sympathy for the wrongdoer. He resigned, as you say, from the law firm. Now, I Googled him. I did a bit more work on this. I Googled him. He qualified in 1996, specialises in company, corporate law, mergers, speaks four languages, this man. LinkedIn shows he hasn't worked since his resignation. And this feels like now his life is potentially ruined. Could you Google the man, the first thing that comes up is this incident.
Yeah, absolutely.
Potentially ruined by one night's totally inappropriate behaviour. And I'm not sure the punishment fits the crime. It feels excessive to become a permanent pariah over this. He shouldn't have done it, but I'm not convinced he should have his life, or at least his career, ruined by it.
No, and I'm inclined to agree, actually. And I mean, the feminist in me is just sick of men behaving inappropriately, particularly when they've had a drink, because they feel they can. So, in a way, I'm not sympathetic. But having said that, I do agree this does seem to be excessive, particularly when... So this same article referred to... the decision was the second time the SRA has taken action against a solicitor in relation to misconduct of social occasion. So the previous day, there had been another story, which I think is rather more serious. And if you talk about reducing trust in the profession, this seems a bit more appropriate, I think. So a male solicitor who punched a female colleague in the face at a pre-Christmas social occasion has been rebuked. He struck his colleague at a party in Liverpool city centre. He was a former partner. And there's a sort of a pattern here, isn't there, that there are former partners. And maybe, you know, if you're a partner in a firm, you're expected to behave yourself, really, and you have responsibility. And this chap voluntarily attended a police station for interview. May 2016, he got a conditional caution for assault by beating. He had to write a letter of apology to the victim and pay her compensation £150. And he also admitted that he'd failed to uphold the rule of law and failed to behave in a way that maintains a trust the public place in him. Obviously, more of an issue here because he actually committed a criminal offence. He smacked someone. It says here that he explained that he was dealing with some difficult personal circumstances at the time. I mean, I find this to be, I think this is worse because if I was just an ordinary member of the public rather than, you know, in this darn profession, I think someone punching somebody, a man punching a woman at a Christmas party is something that I think is far more inappropriate, really. So I'm glad that they took action there. And it does seem to be a bit strange that you know, this chap... I mean, I haven't researched this chap, actually, but this chap, it doesn't look like he'd left the firm. No. I mean, and I might just quickly look for him now, but it does seem to be, you know, the chap that behaved inappropriately at the Christmas party, he, you know, he's, you know, as you say, he's left firm and had his life potentially ruined. And
the punching man maybe is in a better situation in terms of his career. And as you say, that doesn't seem right. And in all essences of the law, whether it's the law society or in open court of the land, the whole essence of our system should be based on that each case is taken on its merits, and it seems
although
to me
actually,
that
yeah,
you know, this your law society people here are just kind of sort of willy-nilly making people pay costs and rebuking them and so on. But each
although,
case,
although interestingly, there is more to this case now. I've just googled this. It's made the Mail Online. Solicitor who was punched in the face by drunken ex police sergeant turned lawyer on boozy night out. argued the decision. You know, argued against the decision, you know, giving him a caution. So actually, it is interesting that, you know, in a way, this is even worse. This bloke used to be a police sergeant, and you know, and there he is punching someone at a Christmas party, and yet, you know, who knows, he may yet still have a career,
which doesn't feel right compared to the other fellow. So there's no natural justice here, and as I say, in all of these situations, each case should be taken separately and looked at, because quite often there are different circumstances that need to be taken into account. But I do have I do have that ounce of sympathy with number one man, a solicitor there. But hopefully, if you're attending any inns, bars or taverns this week, you will avoid such situations. But where might we find you in the coming week?
Well, it's the Saturday Social this evening on Barricade Radio. So that's 6 until 7 p.m. Northern Soul, Motown, Mod, etc. You can listen to me at barricaderadio.com or on the TuneIn app. You can find Barricade Radio there as well. I will also be doing Indie Wonderland once again next Wednesday on the same station, barricaderadio.com, from 8 until 10 p.m. And that is Indie, Alt Rock and Miscellaneous. And I do not believe that I have any live engagements. My Rip It Up night has come to an end. So I would have been doing that last night, but instead I got to watch a film with Rosamund Pike in it, so I feel that I was winning at life in a way.
If you wish, you could always contact us, and the easiest way to do that is through Twitter, and Jules is at SuperJules84.
Yes, which I'm still a bit cross with my past self about, but never mind.
And I'm at Sir Terence.
The self-styled Sir Terence, yes.
Indeed. Now, time leaves, time fades, and it's Polly Jean to take us out.
It is, yes. I think it's been a little while since I've introduced her to the wilds of the podcast. So I played this on Indie Wonderland earlier this week because I don't know what it was about it. Maybe there was talk of a civil war or something on TV, and it made me think of this song. And I do like the records that she's made with John Parish. They've made two albums together, and this was a sort of build as a pair explicitly. He has been, you know, they've been working together for years. She first joined his band. Well, she asked his band, Automatic Lumini, to play at her 18th birthday party, which was some time ago, and nearly 30 years ago, I think.
Wow.
And they've been kind of working together since, and he often plays in her band, and she appears on his work, and they're very much joint efforts, the two albums that they've done together. He tends to do most of the music, and she tends to do most of the lyrics and kind of vocals. And this is from Dance Hall at Louse Point, which was their first album, sort of just specifically billed as a duo together in 1996, and this is Civil War Correspondent.
Love has You have been listening to a DACM Media production.